Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Ladies Talking Leafs, Season 4, Episode Number 9. I'm Chris.
And I'm Sil.
We got a lot to cover in this episode, so before we get going, just a reminder to let us know what you think about the show. And you do that by leaving us a review on Apple or rating on Spotify. It's so important you do this for us to get more exposure as a source for Leaf content, and we thank you for taking the time.
And you can also check out our Ko-fi page, where we've posted lots of photos from our road trip to Carolina and our recent tour of the NHL office that we talked about on our last show. So if you choose to, you can make a donation there, which will help us produce the show and make it even better for you. So you can find the link to our Ko-fi page on any of our show notes or in our social media profile pages. So we're starting off the show with the good, the bad, and the ugly, and we'll run the Ladies Talking Leafs highlight reel. And then in our third period segment, we have our Ladies Talking Leafs insider, Mike Ogiello, joining us to talk Leafs and what moves Kyle Dubas and company could be thinking of doing as we get closer to deadline day. So without any further ado, let's talk Leafs.
Okay, the good, the bad, the ugly. So I actually had a tough time picking out my good, but so I ended up, and it shouldn't really have been that way, but I ended up picking Sheldon Keefe, our coach. I went a different direction here. I just like the last couple of weeks, I just like his, the way he's handling things, actually. Like, for example, during that Montreal game versus the Habs, in between periods, apparently, which wasn't a very good game, obviously, for us. But in between periods, he actually pulled Austin Matthews aside in the hallway before going into the dressing room, obviously.
Yeah, I heard about that. Mm-hmm.
To have a little discussion with him. It didn't make a difference, but still, I think that's showing some oomph in his power as a head coach. And and I like the way he's been handling the Marlies as well, the Marley call-ups, like Pontus Holmberg, where he took versus the Senators, he took the 6 minutes in penalties, and he made a point of saying, like, that just can't happen, taking 6 minutes, because he ended up moving Kerfoot back up into the third line center, right?
Especially in that game, he elevated him to the second line, yeah, you know, role. So that was like an opportunity for him to show something, right?
Yeah, yeah. So I like that. And I also like his handling of the goaltending, giving Samsonov the run of games recently, and just starting to show some confidence in at least one of the two goaltenders that hopefully, knock on wood, still stays healthy. And yeah, I just really don't know why he's not. I mean, there has been a little bit of conversation about the Jack Adams Trophy for Coach of the Year, and he's never even mentioned about it. And when you mm-hmm. think of all the injuries that they've had this year, they're actually number one in the league now in games lost. Yeah.
Like, and they're still up there at the top of the league.
Yeah. So
that's showing a lot.
I think he should be. I think the last person, I didn't look this up beforehand, but I think the last head coach, Jack Adams, was Pat Burns.
Oh, yeah.
That we've had, right? Mm-hmm. We're never, were never considered at all, like for that, our team. I don't know.
It's true. And I mean, I know, like, you know, Babcock, you know, he's the name that no one wants to talk about these days. True. But even at the beginning, I think he was also somebody that we're, you know, the very first couple of years where we were wondering why he was never considered. And I don't think he's ever been considered, considering, you know, the accolades that he's, you know, up until his demise as a coach, he's considered the top coach in the league, you know, coach Team Canada and everything. And even Pat Quinn, I don't think he ever really got credit either.
That's who I was going to mention too. Yeah.
It's interesting. But, you know, if you look at even, you know, Tampa's coach, Cooper, he's rarely nominated. I think it's difficult.
But I look at too, like they're saying Jim Montgomery of the Bruins, and I'm like, how the hell is he getting considered when he basically has a team that already was put together? And
100%.
And how is he getting considered? Like, how is he getting nominated? I don't understand it. Like, he already, I don't know. Considering again, I mean,
did Cassidy ever win?
I don't think so. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
Anyhow, so I'm giving the good to Sheldon Keefe.
Well, I think that's actually really nice that you're giving him some props, since a lot of times he gets a lot of criticism, you know, from a lot of different areas. And so, yes, he definitely deserves to be given some kudos when it's deserved. And, you know, he's done a lot of winning here. So, yeah. I definitely can't disagree with that. So my good is Timothy Liljegren. I think that most people would agree that he's really come into his own this season. And he is just becoming, you know, especially with Riley out for so much of the season up to now, I think he's arguably becoming probably, you know, next to Brody, our top guy. And he's actually a pretty resilient player, you know, doesn't get hurt, knock on wood.
Yeah.
And, you know, he scored that beautiful tying goal the other night against the Rangers, which shows that he's got like a really good, plays on that edge of being offensive, but no, doesn't give up the defensive side of it. I mean, obviously he's a young player. He's still going to make mistakes. I think as a defenseman, you're going to make mistakes every now and again. But for a guy who basically wasn't trusted to play more than two games in the first round of the Stanley Cup last year, I want to say final. What does that mean?
Yeah, I was going to say that was good.
It felt like a Stanley Cup final. Maybe that's why. Anyways, now he's playing upwards of 20 minutes a night. So definitely he has the trust of the coach.
Yeah. And when it comes to coaching, actually, I read this too, that NHL coaches say that it takes 200 games to really know what you have in a young defenseman. Mm-hmm. And Liljegren right now, including today, we're recording on Sunday for the game versus the Capitals, he would have played 114 games in the regular season. So he still has a little bit of runway there. And one stat that I found interesting too, when looking up Liljegren's stats, he has only been on the ice 14 times when scored upon at even strength, which is actually close to it is the best of the Leafs, and it's one of the best in the NHL too, when it comes to that at even strength. So yeah, he's really, I guess he is a young player. So it's the identity, I guess, of the player too. He has to learn what his identity is. And through, I guess, the coaching of Sheldon Keefe that we talked about before, I think that really, it's really helped him find the identity this year. And, I think he could be a solid top four. It's funny because we were always talking about Sandin being that top four, and somehow Liljegren has jumped a little bit ahead of him right now, I think, in the growth as a defenseman. So
yeah, definitely. It'll be interesting, and I can't wait to see what he turns into.
Yeah. And so now moving on to the bad. It's always something bad, unfortunately. we cancel out the ugly, but we can't cancel out the bad. So the bad for me is the Leafs playing the right way only when they have to. And by that, I mean, if you look at going back to our road trip to Carolina back in early November, that was on a back-to-back, the second half. Mm-hmm. They beat the Bruins 2-1 in Boston, and then they beat the Carolina Hurricanes in Carolina 3-1. So they can do it like that. That was basically an all-out like team defense. And I'm not sure how many injuries. I think Muzzin was out by then. But I'm not sure. I think Brody was out. I think Riley was still playing then. But anyways, we had some injuries, but they had that commitment to team defense for that entire weekend. And then they did that again versus the Lightning on December 20th at home. They beat the Lightning 4-1. So you look at those games, and I think there was another game in early January where they really had showed that commitment. But then you look at these games versus the Habs and versus the Senators, losing at home 6-2 to the Ottawa Senators, who are 23 points behind us.
Yeah, that was a disgrace.
Like, how do you do that? Like, it just doesn't. So this is what I mean. Only when they want to or think they have to, and you can't. And most people say this, you can't flip the switch, let's just say come playoff time, and say, oh, now we have to play all of a sudden team defense. When you want to be a great team and go far in the playoffs, you got to commit. I mean, yes, you're not going to win every game, obviously, right? And some nights you won't have it. But this pattern of playing down to the opponent, it's just too much. Like, it's just happening way too much.
And it's not even that they lose. It's like if they lose by one goal, that's fine. Like that would be, you know, more understandable, because like you said, you can't win every night, and you can't, you know, have the pedal to the metal every night either. Like, I think, you know, I remember Chicago when they were winning their cups, like, I guess they had, you know, games where they just decided that they weren't, you know, maybe this was a loss and then they weren't going to push it. Fine. I understand that. But to lose that way, you know, like the 6-2, that's ugly. And the same against Arizona, that there's only three games that they've in the whole year that they've lost by six goals to a game. And that's not by six goals, but like with with the opposition scoring six. That was Ottawa. Arizona was another one.
Yeah.
And St. Louis, which is, you know, whatever.
Didn't they lose to Seattle too? I think they lost.
Yeah,
to
but
Seattle,
not six.
Oh, not six.
Six goals.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mind you, Seattle's.
Maybe it was probably five. But the thing is it's some of it is how you lose. But, you know, maybe it is that thing that they're like, okay, it's not happening for us tonight. And then they just don't put their don't put their energy into it anymore. Which I guess if it means that we're going to go far in the playoffs, I can forgive. But, you know, that's the difference between Chicago and us, is that we've yet to prove that. And as a Chicago Blackhawks fan at that time, you could say, okay, that's fine, because they're going to bring it in the playoffs. So until we see that, these losses are going to sit very sourly in our mouths, let's just say. Like, it's just not going to sit well with us. Yeah. And that is, again, like why we need to see them, you know, make it past a round at least. Us to believe that they can. I mean, really, even one round is probably not going to be good enough. But if they're keeping some reserves in the tank by doing this, then, you know, I want to see it there in the spring. So,
yeah. All right. What's your bad?
So my bad is especially, you know, in these kind of bad losses are giveaways. And unfortunately, a lot of these are led by Justin Hall, who, if you look at the column for giveaways in the past five games, he always has the most. And in the two losses that we had in the last five games, the bigger ones, you know, Montreal and this last one against Ottawa, he had led the team, except for, I think, he was tied with Connor Timmins for one of them. But yeah, it's just, I don't know. Like, he's played really, really well this year in a lot of different spots, especially when Riley was out. He seemed to be putting his best games in.
Yeah.
But it's almost like since Riley's been back, and I don't know if it's because some of the time they've been paired together and it's just not a good combination. But yeah, like when he's bad, he's bad, unfortunately. And it always seems to kind of lead to a goal.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, he's obviously, he's going back into a little bit of a playing down basically Justin Hall, but I mean, Connor Timmins also gave away the puck blatantly to Pastrnak in the Boston game.
Yeah.
And JT also did give a giveaway as well. So to me, it's the fact that I guess Justin Hall too, when he does a giveaway, it's like open for everybody to like,
yeah,
go on.
There's
him.
No, he's there's easy no sugarcoating it.
Let's just say. Yeah. And, Connor Timmins had that one, but it was interesting. I was looking at the giveaways in the league, and they were saying that, and it's true actually, according to these stats here, they were saying that the more you play, the more giveaways you're going to have. So,
well, yeah, that
the
makes
more
sense.
More time you're on the ice. So, you know, I was surprised actually. The number one in the league. Do you know who number one in the league is? I'm looking at it now
for giveaways.
Yeah.
No.
Can you take a guess?
No.
he is on the Bruins, and I mentioned his name.
Oh, Pastrnak?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, this season, he has 73 giveaways.
Yeah.
And he's not too far ahead of Evgeny Malkin, is at 67. Our highest giveaway person right now is, and it makes
it's probably
sense
not even Justin Hall, is it?
No. It's Mitch Marner.
Yeah.
Because he plays all the time, right? And he's on the penalty kill too. So he has 50. But considering he's eighth, he's at 55. Mm-hmm. And Connor McDavid is just below him at 53. He's 10th.
Yeah.
Right. And so even Nikita Kucherov is 9th.
The difference is that these guys that you're all mentioning, they're all forwards. So they can offset their giveaways by guess what?
That's true.
Their offensive output.
Yeah.
As a defenseman with the giveaways, that is, you know, that you're the last man standing, you know, next to your goaltender. So I think it's different when it's a defensive zone giveaway. Yeah. Versus, because they're not going to offset it with being able to produce.
Yeah. And
unless they're a really offensively gifted defenseman, like say somebody like Kale McCarr.
Yeah. And you definitely, I mean, it's just, again, it just goes back to how blatant it is. Like, you know, like you, I mean, it's obviously for us, we're not playing the game. It's easy to say it, but like the options are there for him to, like take a route up the boards and or not pass it across the middle, that sort of thing. But he just doesn't do that in those moments.
Well, then because that's the other difference between the a defenseman versus an offensive player, you know, is especially the guys you mentioned. They're all creative type of players. So when you're a creative type of player, you're doing all kinds of cycling and you're trying to create something. So the chances of you giving it up in that point is greater. But as a defenseman, you need to make the smart, simple play, right? Yes. None of that stuff, right? Yeah. So that's why I think that's where the difference comes in anyways.
So I
hopefully he'll get out of this little bit of a rut and get back to playing smart.
Yes. Starting tonight versus the Capitals.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So we don't have any ugly, thankfully, but we do have some beauty highlights from the past couple of weeks. So we're going to roll the Ladies Talking Leafs highlight reel.
All right. So coming in at number 3, we have Austin Matthews versus the Jets. His goal 8 seconds into period 2 was vintage Austin Matthews. He took the puck off of Mark Scheifele and then ripped it past Jets goalie Connor Hellebuyck for a beauty goal.
Yeah, that was, that opened the scoring too. So that just got us going into the game. And unfortunately, I mean, I think it's been talked about enough. We really didn't mention that Austin Matthews is injured now, but he's out of the lineup for a little bit. But I mean, and it's too bad because after having that little rest, he really showed that he came back flying basically in the games. And We just want him to be healthy, though, for April.
That's right.
That's the main thing.
What made this one even sweeter for me, I think, was basically digging out Shifley and ripping him off. That was just beautiful. We all know that it's a Stanley Cup for them every time they play us. So, so to beat him on that rush was even more sweet.
Yeah. Okay, coming in at number two is our goaltender, Ilya Samsonov. So he's been terrific in the last stretch of games that he's had in net, particularly that game versus the Jets, where they only got one by him, and it was on a 5-on-3. So on the power play, the Jets scored. So he also made some spectacular saves versus the Rangers. He's now 14-1-1 at home with his first loss in regulation in that game versus the Senators, where he still played really, really well. And he was really put in a tough spot with Matt Murray coming up with this ankle injury or whatever it is, the flare up that he has. And Samsonov didn't know he was playing until basically like an hour before the game time, I guess. Kudos to him. And he's, I like his personality too. Like he's in the interviews and that he seems like a fun loving guy and for a goalie. And he's just, I mean, there's lots of stats about him. Like he was, I think it was 14 games that he had at least a point at home, like coming, like that's a streak, I guess, for goalies for home games, for his first home games, even though they're not played consecutively, obviously, but because Murray was in between. But for his 14 games that he played in a row, he got a point, and that's really big for us and him.
And I think that you can't overlook that in this stretch. He's come up against his opponents are some of the top goalies in the league, including some of his Russian mates in Sorokin and Shesterkin. Yeah, and he showed up and then some against those guys. So, more kudos to him. And hopefully, he can keep it going. And, you know, once he hunkers down, like he's definitely tough to beat. So
healthy.
That's pretty good. Yes, he has to stay healthy.
Yeah.
All right. So in our number one spot, I think no one could argue this one is Mitch Marner. And it's with regards to his overtime winner versus the Rangers, which was just beautiful. Cutting across the front of the net, he got tripped up by Shesterkin's stick and went flying through the air, Bobby Orr-esque, and still managed to hold on to the puck and tuck it past the goalie. So, Bobby Orr, he didn't go flying until after he scored. And Mitch actually scored while he was flying. So so that's pretty, pretty awesome and a great way to finish that game up.
Yeah. I mean, what can you say about Mitch? He's having a phenomenal season. I guess his home point streak ended. I guess on Friday night then, right? Yeah. At 20 games. But still, it's great what he's been doing. And we're going to need more of that with Matthews being out. We're going to definitely need him and Willie and JT to step it up a little bit along with the rest of the team, hopefully get some depth scoring. But on the topic of JT, we just want to give him we need to mention him, obviously, today versus the Capitals. He's playing his 1,000th game. And I didn't have time to read it, but some of his teammates from the Islanders were saying great things about him. And I hope...
That's nice.
Yes, and I hope the fans of the New York Islanders become more respectful and actually... I think we have another game there that they actually give him an ovation for playing the 1,000th game, because he did a lot for that organization as well. And they would not be they would not be where they are if it wasn't for JT. So
absolutely.
Kudos to our captain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So congratulations to JT on that milestone. Apparently he's going to have a lot of family and friends in the audience tonight. So that's really good too.
It's going to be special. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so now we're going to move on to our third period segment, where we have our well, it's not our inaugural interview with Mike, but this is his first time coming on as our official Ladies Talkin' Leafs insider. So listen to our interview with Mike.
So for our third period segment and for our Leaf Talk segment, we want to welcome back to the show for the first time as our Ladies Talking Leafs insider, Mike Ajello. As mentioned in our first show of the new year, we're going to have Mike on a regular basis to discuss everything going on behind the scenes with the Leafs.
Yes, and Mike covers the Leafs and the NHL as a reporter and is a co-host of a few podcasts, including for HockeyBuzz.com, Off the Post Radio, and the Leafs Convo. He's also a writer for Full Press Hockey covering the NHL and has a blog on HockeyBuzz.com. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Ladies, always a pleasure.
Yes, you're very busy with all that stuff, and we're going to make you busier.
Mm-hmm. And believe me, the Leafs don't keep you busy with all the news that they make, you know?
Yeah, yeah. True. That's for sure. All right, so we're going to start off, first of all, with this current Leafs team and the goaltending, of course. That's the, it started off with Austin Matthews, of course, but then that's been talked about, and he's hopefully just going to get better. But now with Matt Murray and the ankle injury that we heard this morning about. And I don't know, I just thought it was kind of odd that, like, I know it's a flare-up, but wouldn't you know about this? It kind of put him in a tough position, Samsonov, last night versus the Senators. He wasn't expecting to play, and the goalies, they obviously have a routine to for the game day and all that. What did you think about that whole thing with Matt Murray? And
it just smacked me as odd because, I mean, I had looked at the schedule and said, well, Samsonov is 14-0-1 at home. But if you're going to get Murray a start and there is no health issue playing against Ottawa, the team that basically gave him away for nothing and said, we'll take 25% just to get rid of this guy, the motivation would have been there for him. And I expected Murray to start against the Sens. He left the morning skate first, so he looked to be the guy, and he took the warm-up as if he would be the starter. And there was, and I retweeted it, there was a video of him taking a sort of a high shot from William Nylander, and somebody thought that maybe he had caught like this collarbone or a shoulder or something. And, you know, he checked with him and looked like everything was okay. But apparently, you know, this was something that Sheldon Keefe said that they were dealing with on an ongoing basis. And it wasn't anything of a serious nature. Otherwise, they would have called somebody up and he was okay to be the backup for Samsonov. But like you were saying, goaltenders are creatures of habit. And when you say you're going to start 15 minutes, 20 minutes before the game, that can throw somebody, you know, into a little bit of a tizzy. I'm an old goaltender. Yeah. I mean, street hockey, not regular hockey, but you know, if you're telling me I'm going in, then oh, okay, you know, you're just off a little bit. And Samsonov did look off, but the long ranging concern here is Murray, and we had the adductor injury earlier in the year, and he's had a long stretch where he's been fine. I mean, he's had his off days here or there, but he's in general been pretty good. It's a question of how long this is going to be. The Leafs are in a much better position goaltending wise in terms of the way or where they were when Eric Schallgren had to play back-to-back games in, I think it was November. Joseph Woll is the hottest goaltender right now in the American Hockey League and played great last night after losing, I think it was to Abbotsford earlier in the week. So if they have to call up somebody, and Woll has had some NHL experience from last year, it's not something that is going to be like debilitating on a long-term basis. So if they have to call him up, they have some options.
So what do you think about the fact that Murray hasn't played against his own team, his old team, twice now?
Well, the first time, I mean, I was there on that game for that game at the morning skate when he got hurt. Mm-hmm. And it really didn't. It, like, I missed it, and most of the people missed it. I think David Alter from Sports Illustrated caught it and said something was off there. And then all of a sudden, we found out that, you know, Samson are up, that he was going to be out. And there was a scramble there that, you know, the E-Bug would have had to be the backup, and they didn't even have Shalgren had been hurt the night before in a game in Rochester, and they didn't know if he was going to be available. So it was a scramble for a couple hours. In this situation, Shalgren is healthy with the Marlies. So is Wall. Wall's back, and Wall's playing great. So it's much less of a concern. But overall, I mean, I think this break that's coming up, this 9-day break with the All-Star break and the bye week, it's happening at the best time for the Leafs.
Absolutely.
They have two more games to go against Washington tomorrow and against Boston on Wednesday, and then they don't play again until February 10th. So that's coming up at a really good time for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's for sure. And so anyhow, I just hope he's ready for, do you think Murray is still going to, they're hoping for him to be like the starter for the playoffs? Do you think that?
I mean, you've seen that they've been riding Samson off the last, since Murray had that bad early part of the game against Florida, Samsonov came in relief. That was the first time a Leaf goalie, I believe, had been pulled for something other than injury this year. Yeah. Samsonov played great, even in the loss against Montreal. Last night was the first night that he really was not sharp. So I think they wanted to get one goalie to sort of carry the load and see if he could do that. All in all, I mean, I know that Samsonov had playoff experience last year with Washington against Florida, but all things being equal, I would expect Matt Murray to still be the starter when game one of the playoffs comes along. But, you know, if he does and he doesn't play well, then they can go to Samsonov. They have options.
Okay, so let's move to the defense discussion now. So, we've talked about injuries. We have a defenseman that has just come back recently from injury. Well, it's not that recent now, which I guess is why we're asking the question. So do you have any concerns with the play of Morgan Rielly, or will everything be fixed once TJ Brody is back in the lineup, which seems quite imminent because I heard that this morning he was wearing a regular jersey in practice. So
the concern about Rielly, I mean, it was obvious based on his play. I don't think he was particularly sharp. He was out for 5 weeks with the knee injury. I didn't think he was particularly sharp when he came back. I don't think he came back too early. I don't think this medical staff would allow him to come back too early. But there's always a natural hesitancy when a player is coming back from injury, especially a player who relies so much on his skating ability as Rielly does. I didn't think he was particularly sharp. I don't think Sheldon Keefe was doing him any favors playing him with Justin Hall, especially last night, because Justin Hall, the Justin Hall we know and love made a reappearance yesterday. Not the Justin Hall that played when Rielly was hurt, because that Justin Hall, there was like he sort of like transformed from Rod Langway or something. The guy that showed up yesterday, giving away the puck twice that ended up in the back of his net. That's the Justin Hall that we know and loathe. But he played really well with Liljegren, and I don't know why Sheldon Keefe decided to change things up. Now, Rielly is best when he has a defenseman who covers up for his, he wants to rush the puck. He wants to attack into the offensive zone. Brody is the perfect guy to do that. But last year, as we know in the playoffs, They needed Brody to pair with Muzzin, because Muzzin, I think, was a little bit compromised in terms of his health. And they had Labushkin, and he played with Rielly and I think did a pretty decent job as a stay-at-home guy. Once Brody comes back, I think Brody is going to be with Rielly, unless they have to, nurse somebody through, and that could be Hall. Again, Sheldon Keefe just, no matter what, has to play Justin Hall 21, 22 minutes a night. So, but I think the best pairing for Rielly would be Brody. But in the last couple games, I think he has gotten back to being the Rielly that was there before the injury. He still doesn't have a goal, but I still think he's...
That's what I was just going to say. We wish he would just get a goal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it'll come in a rare. Yeah. He'll get a goal and then he'll score 3 or 4.
100%.
Yeah, I keep picking Morgan on the Tim's hockey challenge thing. I keep hoping that'll work for him, but I don't know, not yet. Okay. All right. So because trade deadline, it's coming up in about a month or so. So I want to talk to you mostly about that and the trade possibilities coming up. I guess trade deadline's March the 3rd. And we all know that Tampa's going to be playing in the playoffs, or they're going to be playing in the playoffs. Are you hearing any news to say Kyle Dubas and the Leafs are going to make a big move, or is it going to be a couple of death moves, do you think? Or what are you hearing that way?
He seems to be spending a lot of time in Vancouver.
Well, yeah. I mean, I know the reporter for The Athletic put out last night that Dubas and Dave Morrison, who's the head of pro scouting, I believe, were at the Vancouver game. Now, yes, they've been at, I don't know if this been that they've been at more than one Vancouver game, but conspicuous was who Vancouver was playing last night, which was the Columbus Blue Jackets. And, you know, one of the names that has been tied to Toronto has been Vladislav Gavrikov, the Blue Jackets defenseman. He's an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year. He's making less than $3 million. He is somebody who has played Tampa Bay twice in the playoffs in the last few years. I believe he was on the team that swept them a few years ago with Tortorella as the head coach, and he played against Tampa after Columbus beat the Leafs in Tampa, they lost to Tampa in the second round, or in the first round because it was the play-in round. So he has experience against Tampa. He's 27 years old. I would think that Toronto, in a situation where they're trading for a defenseman, would like to get somebody who either has term or somebody that they can extend. And, you know, maybe Gavrikov is that type of player. I mean, his agent is Daniel Milstein, who Dubas has had a long record of negotiations with. I mean, he's Amarov's agent. He was the agent for Ilya Mikheyev. So I think they have a good relationship and think they usually cut pretty fair, pretty good deals. So I would think just as much as maybe the potential of them looking at Luke Shen, who is on the Canucks, it would be Gavrikov. Now, as for whether Dubas can make a big splash or not, it all matters on, I mean, right now they're $1.1 million under the cap. And that's including Jake Muzzin's LTIR and Nick Robertson's LTIR and Victor Mete's LTIR and all the players that are injured. It includes everything. So they don't have a lot of room. Now, they can massage that. They can send Wayne Simmonds to the minors. They can send Joey Anderson to the minors, and they can get that amount over $2 million. But that's, I mean, unless you're getting Columbus to retain 50%, or you're trading a player through a third team, you know, it's, I don't know whether they can make a move for a forward and a defenseman, which is something that Elliot Friedman has indicated that they want to do. So either that means they have to get one of these players traded through a third team, or that means they're going to trade somebody off of the roster. So if it's a third team, then that costs you additional assets to make that happen. And if it's trading somebody off the roster, then you have to ask who that will be. Will it be Pierre Engvall? Will it be Alex Kerfoot? Will it be Justin Hall? I mean, it could be any one of the three. I mean, barring an injury and somebody else being placed on LTIR, those are your options. So I think that Dubas wants to make a big splash, but I don't know if he can make a big splash. And I'll just say, add this, because I'm amused by this. All of a sudden, and I'm not disputing that it is out there, because people like Darren Brager, who is really good at his job, and Mike Johnson from TSN and a few other people have been reporting about the availability of Matthew Nyes, the Leafs' top prospect. All of a sudden, you know, oh, I mean, it makes a lot of sense that the Leafs would be willing to trade Matthew Nyes if they're going all in. And Kyle Dubas, you know, he's basically singing for a supper, and he's got to win this year or he's going to lose his job. Okay. I don't know whether Brendan Shanahan would allow Kyle Dubas to trade Matthew Nyes in a deal for a rental, because this is a 20-year-old prospect who is very good and is a unicorn in terms of the Leafs. He's a big, bruising, power forward type, something they don't have. And if they don't get something in terms of a return for a player that has term on his contract, I can't see them trading Matthew Knies at all. So I think this is being filtered out there in the Toronto ether to sort of like make, you know, sort of grease the wheels for Matthew Knies to be included in a deal. I don't think there's a chance that Matthew Knies is being included in a deal.
Well, that's actually an interesting point, and that makes a lot of sense. Talking a little bit about D, you've already mentioned a couple of the potential trades that we kind of had, were thinking of or had heard about. So Gavrikov and the possibility of Luke Shen. But what about somebody like Jake McCabe from the Blackhawks? What have you heard about him?
Well, Frank Cervalli reported the rumor regarding McCabe, and I do know that Elliot Friedman had mentioned McCabe a few weeks ago in regards in connection with Edmonton. And that chatter ended fairly quickly. And if you put the two rumors together, Cervalli mentioned that McCabe has a 7-team no-trade list. Which, you know.
That, 7 teams, yeah.
That rings doorbells, but apparently the 6 Canadian teams excluding Toronto. So Toronto is not one of the 7 teams that is blocked by the no trade clause. Now, Jake McCabe played most of his career with Buffalo. When he played in Buffalo, I thought he was a pretty good defenseman. But the big question mark here, he's got 2 more years left in his contract at $4 million. He has had 3 major injuries, a shoulder problem that ended, I think it was 2018, that ended his season prematurely in Buffalo. A major knee injury, ACL, MCL, with the Sabres that ended his career with the Sabres. He ended up signing a free agent deal with Chicago after that. And then this year, a cervical spine injury, which is the same area injury as Jake Muzzin. So a player with 2 years left at $4 million with that kind of injury history, if I'm a general manager, I'm saying, okay, I'm interested, but are we going to get, we're getting him for pennies on the dollar, because there's a lot of risk there. And stuff coming out of Chicago is, well, if we have to eat $2 million, then we want a first round pick. I hang up if it's me, but the Leafs apparently like him. And, you know, if they get Chicago to retain salary and he's a $2 million defenseman for 2 years, then I don't think Kyle Dubas is anxious to give away his first round pick, especially for a defenseman who's, I think, a middle defenseman, like maybe a 4, maybe a really good 5. So I don't know. I mean, I'm a little skeptical. Yeah. The rumor of the interest might be true, but whether they're willing to give up what Chicago is looking for, that's what I'm skeptical about.
Makes sense. Going back to the Kyle Dubas there on the salary cap, just for a second, not to get too much into it, but with Jake Muzzin, like, he's making, it's $5 million, something just over $5 million, right, per season. So we're not, when it comes to the cap and him being on LTIR, like, we don't get the full value of that 5.6 then? It's just...
Well, it's not that. It's the fact that, you would have had... He's on LTIR, but the thing was, when he was placed on LTIR, and at that point of the season, the Leafs were carrying 20 or 21 players on their roster. Since they placed him on LTIR, they called up, and now they have a full 23-man roster. They have 14 forwards, 7 defensemen or 8 defensemen, and 13 forwards and 2 goalies. So they used the LTIR space to call up Joey Anderson and Bobby McMahon.
Oh, I see.
So, to get more of that space, they would have to go to 20 or 21 players. That's why all the calculations regarding available cap space would be sort of mitigated by whether they trade somebody off their active roster or whether they send players down. Like Wayne Simmons, I'm pretty confident in the fact that Wayne Simmons will be placed on waivers before March the 3rd. Maybe he won't go down. Maybe he won't play games for the Marlies. But on paper, he'll be demoted. He'll be placed on waivers. He'll clear. And that takes $900,000 off the cap. They'll do that. They'll open up as much space as possible. But for them to add a defenseman and a forward they're going to have to probably clear out another big salary.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. And now, actually, we're going to talk about the forwards now, because we talked about the D and the forwards. Some of the big names we've heard are like Ryan O'Reilly, Bo Horvat, of course, from the Canucks, and Timo Meier of the Sharks, which personally, I don't think, I mean, Timo Meier is that, like that contract that he has, it's like $10 million or something that he still has left. And then there, so those are the big names. And then there's the depth move players like Lawson Crouse, I've heard, Max Domi, Nino Niederreiter. Do you know if the Leafs would have any interest in any of those players?
Well, I'm sure, you know, they have interest in all of them. It's whether they can make them happen. I mean, the first thing with Meier, I don't think that the Leafs are, I mean, don't get me wrong, I think they would love to get him. But the price to get Timo Meier is probably the usual first round pick, top prospect, and a player. And San Jose doesn't want somebody like an Alex Kerfoot, who's a UFA. They'd probably want Nyes or Topi Niemelä or Nick Robertson, or, you know, a legitimate prospect. The thing with Meier is he's got a $10 million qualifying offer. He's an RFA. He's not a UFA. He's got a $10 million qualifying offer this summer. Now, the way around that is, now, if you're going to give up all this and you can't, and you don't want to sign him for $10 million for a year, then you just don't qualify him and he becomes an unrestricted free agent. But for a team like Toronto, you can qualify him. That's not meaning you're going to sign him to a contract. You qualify him, you retain the rights, and then you could flip him in a trade someplace else to a team that wants to sign him long-term. So if they traded for him, they would have options short of qualifying him at $10 million. It's like qualifying him doesn't mean that they've signed him to a contract. Now, Meier could come back and say, oh, I'll take the qualifying offer, and then it's $10 million, and then he walks away, and then he puts the Leafs in cap jail. But there are options there, and they would have those options before July the 1st. So, but I think they're likely going to go into the rental market. I mean, ideally, they would like to get somebody who has term left. And Lawson Crouse, I believe, is the only one of those players, maybe Niederreiter does, that has term. O'Reilly's a UFA. So is Domi. So is Meier's an RFA. You know, Patrick Kane is a UFA. So if they go in that Martin Bo Horvat as well, if they go in that market, then, you know, you're giving up assets for a rental who they likely will not re-sign. JVR is another name that's been out there. I don't know how realistic it is, but ideally, the Leafs.
I have his jersey.
You still have his hands. This is
nobody. I have his jersey. Come back.
He'd have to. I think he was 25 after he gave up 21, and he'd have to give Connor Timmins a Rolex watch to get his jersey back. I mean, we know where the slot is that the Leafs want to fill. It's the left wing slot on the second line with Tavares and Marner. And if you look at that, you would say, well, that rules out O'Reilly or Horvat because they're primarily centers. But we see what's happening right now with one injury to Austin Matthews, and that means Pontus Holmberg playing center on the second line. And I like Pontus Holmberg, and he's a good young player. And I have a lot of, I think he's going to be something in years to come, but he's not ready to carry the burden that Tavares does as a number two center. So that's why, you know, getting an O'Reilly or getting a Horvat or somebody capable of playing center is something that might be a good option. But again, the price on most of these guys will be a first round pick and something of tangible value. Crouse is the only player in this list, and he's locked up for 4 years at over $4 million. He is the only one that I would conceivably give up Matthew Nyes in a deal for, simply because you've got cost certainty there, and he's 25 or 26 years old, and we know what type of player he is. He's a tough SOB who, you know, is physical. He's what you hope Matthew Nyes will be, although you hope Nyes will have more scoring ability. But if you're looking for a trade for the here and the now, Crouse is the guy. But I don't know how willing Arizona is to trade him.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah. Right. So, so we've mentioned, you know, the potential of a roster player being traded. So I guess Kerfoot is a likely candidate, but we've also heard, you know, possibly Engvall or Sandin even. Mm-hmm. What do you think of the potential for one of those guys going the other way?
Well, Kerfoot for a, and this is the reason why Kerfoot is, you know, it's funny because there are a lot of Kerfoot haters out there. I'm not mm-hmm. one of them. He's a versatile player, can play wing and center, good penalty killer, speedy. He's just not particularly gifted in terms of scoring goals. I mean, he's, you know, he gets lots of chances and, you know, he just doesn't convert. But that, I think that's the reason why he frustrates a lot
but
of people.
But he also has been, like, in the past 3 years when we've had not a lot going in the playoffs, has been right. one of our better playoff performers, too.
Right. When Tavares was knocked out by Corey Perry. Remember, that second line was their best line. Matthews and Marner were shut down, and the best line was Galchenyuk, Kerfoot, and Nylander. So people forget that. People want to forget anything having to do with the Montreal series, and I understand why. but he is versatile. He can fill a number of holes, and like, okay, Matthews gets hurt. Now Kerfoot likely will be the number two center because I don't think Holmberg handled the role pretty well in that first game.
What about Willie? Why are they unwilling to put Willie in that spot?
Because defensively, I think he's compromised. I mean, he's just not a good defensive player. I mean, the funny thing is, and I think
but
you know,
he is better this year. Do you not agree?
He is better this year, but and I've told you this before. There is a dual personality here with William.
Yeah, we had that as a question: is that who are we seeing more of? It's Dr. Nylander.
It's the doctor. Yes. The doctor is in this year, but this is around the same time that Mr. Willie showed up last year.
Correct.
I was saying he belongs in the All-Star game, and then after the All-Star break, I don't know if it was disappointed that he couldn't go to Vegas or whatever it was, but all of a sudden Mr. Willie showed up. You know, he's giving up the puck and the lackadaisical stuff, and then we saw the straight leg in the playoffs and all that stuff. I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's like if he continues to do this, nobody complains because he's been arguably their most him and Marner have been their most consistent forwards all year. But I'm just waiting for the appearance of Mr. Willie.
All right. Well, we will have chances to discuss that in the future months.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
But at center, I don't think he's so used to playing right wing, and a few instances when he's played center, when Babcock was the coach, and even when Sheldon was the coach, there's not, I don't think, a level of trust there. Now, maybe this year, the way he's played, there would be more in a playoff scenario. Maybe you say, okay, our best option here is playing Willie up the middle. I think if they have other options, that they'll explore those other options. Like if it's Kerfoot or if it's somebody that they trade for who can play center, then they'll go down that road before. Because, you know, right now he's just been a demon offensively. He's been consistent and you don't want to mess with that. But you also, you know, there's that chemistry with him either with Tavares or with Matthews. And, you know, when you're the facilitator rather than the guy who is the trigger man, it's a different role. But I don't think they're gonna go with Willie up the middle.
Okay. Well, we'll see, I guess. Hopefully it doesn't come to that where they have to explore that option, right? Anyway, do you got any other little tidbits, anything that you want to add to this conversation?
Well, I thought that maybe, you know, me being sort of like an old time hockey fogey, that, my reaction to certain things were just like, me being a Tyrannosaurus Rex, but I saw Mike McKenna, former NHL goaltender, AHL goaltender Mike McKenna, comment on the same thing that I commented on after the Rangers game on Wednesday. And that was the complete lack of response from the Leafs to two big hits right in front of their nose. And that was Mark Giordano getting laid out by Ryan Lindgren right near the Leafs bench. And earlier, I think it was in the first period, when Liljegren got laid out by Keandre Miller. And the guys on the ice couldn't have skated further away from those two confrontations. They, you know, there's like, what? Did something happen? Oh, you know, they just – and the other than Michael Bunting – when he's on the ice, and Mark Giordano when he did the body slam on Travis Konechny, there is little or no team toughness or pushback on this team. And you can't say that Wayne Simmonds playing 4 minutes is going to provide that. This team, more than anything, if it's not in the top six, and it's tough to get those players, but if you don't, I think more important than getting another defenseman, more important, almost as important as getting a top six forward, is getting one or two players who can play with physicality and a little bit of pushback. Because if you don't think Tampa Bay and Boston are going to push the Leafs around and slam Matthews and Marner and Tavares and Nylander, you got another thing coming. Remember game seven a few years ago when Chara punched Tavares? There'll be more of that stuff. And that's what I'm saying. That, you know, I'm all for skill and speed and, you know, in certain instances, turning the other cheek is the smart thing to do. But there's got to be some accountability and pushback. And if you don't have that, you just encourage those teams to do it more and more and more.
But don't you think that should be more of like a team mindset, that you don't have to be a tough guy to play tough, to stick up for your teammate? Like that is something that should be like a team mindset in a way, right?
I hear you, but other, you know, Giordano is 39 years old. He's a grizzled veteran. He is somebody that, you know, he's been a captain. He's a leader. Do you think he wanted to be the guy that jumped in on Travis Konechny? He had to do that because Konechny was slashing at Matthews and Bunting was sort of, you know, playing like the little dog nipping at the ankles. But somebody had to do something. Otherwise, Matthews was going to get into a fight with Travis Konechny. And the last thing they want to do is have Matthews hurt his wrist or something like that in a fight. You know, there are certain players that have certain roles on teams. And the thing is, it's like, you know, Pierre Engvall, 6'5", and he is a physical specimen, but that's just not his game. Justin Hall is a big defenseman. That's just not his game. Well, they need a couple players that is part of their game. And if they don't have that, then against Tampa, who is going to be their opponent in the first round, if, you know, not only does Maroon and Perry and Killorn and Zach Bogosian, are they physical players, but guys like Kucherov, who is one of the best players in the league, that guy will sewer you. He will slew foot you. He will do anything it takes to win. And Stamkos is physical too. They get physicality out of their skill guys. And that's not part of Marner and Matthews' game. And if it's not part of their game, that's got to be part of somebody else's game.
Well, whatever happened to the days when, like, you know, by all accounts, these guys say they care about each other. That's usually the way that hockey players show they care, is it not? Where that they stick up for each other and you know, you don't have to get into fights necessarily every night to be.
No, it's not fighting, but it's the idea of one, talk about being, let's say, a dinosaur, and I'm a dinosaur. I was telling Syl this, somebody mentioned before, what about having, and I know both you and I share the same player, what about her favorite player? What about having like a Wendell Clark on the left side with Tavares and Nylander? Like that would be the best, like Wendell Clark before the back injuries and everything.
Yeah.
if we could go back in a time warp and get 1987 Wendell when he had 37 goals and they played again, they played in the first two. Yeah. If you could get that guy to put on the line, you know, I mean, first of all, he'd be suspended for 20 games for the hit on Bruce Bell. But yeah, I mean,
the best one.
Well, yeah. And
that was the best.
6'8" Charlie Bergeois didn't want to fight Wendell after that. And he's standing right there. But see, that's the thing. It's like that player, that player doesn't exist anymore.
It doesn't exist. Yeah.
I mean, there are players that are reasonable facsimiles. I mean, first of all, Wendell Clark was 5'11" and 185 pounds. And he was fighting the toughest guys. He was fighting Probert. He was fighting Rick Tocchet. you know, it's like, and that's probably what shortened his career, because his back injuries were created by all those fights and all that physicality.
And then he had the wrist shot that rivals Austin Matthews.
Right. And, and when he turned into just a pure scorer after he recovered from the back problems, he scored 40 some odd goals with Doug Gilmore as his center before getting traded in the deal for Sundin. So, you know, you can just imagine what he would have been had he been able to fight those battles and then put that to the side and be truly a scorer. But I mean, you know, Tom Wilson is not the scorer that Wendell Clark was, but he's more of a he's a big dude. You know, some people think that the guy who the Leafs should trade for is Tyler Bertuzzi from Detroit, but Tyler Bertuzzi has the injury problems that Wendell does. He's had two broken hands, and now he has a hamstring injury. And it's like, if you trade for somebody, you want that player to be available. Nick Foligno wasn't available, unfortunately. I think that would have been a really good trade that would have helped the Leafs in the playoffs, but he got hurt three games into his tenure with the Leafs, and it just never came to pass. Yeah. But
the thing with some of these players, though, like Ryan O'Reilly, he's injured too. Like this, you had Gustav Nyquist, we heard too,
and he's hurt.
Possibility, and now.
But I mean, O'Reilly's supposed to be back, and it's a foot injury. It was from, I think, blocking a shot, so it wasn't something that you expect to recur unless, you know, he's not wearing his shot guards and he gets one off the foot again. But I mean, with O'Reilly, it's more attitude. He's what I would term as a red ass. He's somebody who just, you know, he's somebody who is an Energizer bunny and doesn't quit. And I think that this team, you know, you will get a higher level from some players. Like Engvall will push back in the playoffs like he did last year against Tampa. When the emotions get flowing, you know, these players will support their teammates. I'm not saying that they won't. I'm just saying you need – how do you prevent players from hitting your star players? You have your players hit the other team's star players. There's the whole Wendell Clark – Marty McSorley thing in 93 was McSorley responding. When McSorley hit Gilmore, it was because Wendell Clark was hitting Gretzky. And that was McSorley's warning to the Leafs to have Wendell stop hitting Gretzky, or I'm going to take out your guy. And that's what he did. And the following year, Gino Ogic was going at Gilmore, and Wendell Clark went in front of the Canucks bench and said, he pointed to Pavel Bure and said, if you don't stop going after Gilmore, this guy is a dead man. I'm sort of being over the top, but how do you stop Killorn or Maroon or Perry from going after the Leafs players? You go after the Lightning players. The only way you stop them.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we'll see how it goes. We got a little bit of time to get for Kyle Dubas to figure out, what we can get to get to that point of meanness. Basically, we need toughness is what it is, right? So, and we're gonna have you on before the deadline, definitely again, to join us, and hopefully we'll have a better picture. Right now we're just kind of circling around to see what the possibilities are. So thank you very much, Mike, for joining us as our Ladies Talking Leafs insider. Woohoo. and we'll be talking again soon.
Always a pleasure. Thanks.
Thanks, Mike.
All right. Thanks again to Mike for joining us, and we look forward to having him on the show again before deadline day.
Yeah, so the NHL is heading into the All-Star break, and teams will have their bye week. So it's a light schedule for the Leafs over the next couple of weeks, which is a good thing, because this is like the best time. If Austin's going to be injured, this is the best time for him to be out. So, I mean, he doesn't get to go to the All-Star game, but...
Yeah, if there was a good time, now would be the time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. So in this time frame, though, they do play the Bruins on Wednesday, and then they won't play again until February 10th and the 11th, where we have back-to-back games against the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Yes. And we should win both of those games, going back to my bad of the... Of the good, bad, and ugly. They need to win both of those games. They should. Or at least get 3 out of 4 points, even, like, take it to overtime in one of the games. But they gotta they got to put the foot down, put the pedal to the metal, and and just get it done. Because they are, even without Austin Matthews, they are still a really good team. And they can, if they just commit to the team defense and play the right way, they'll be good during those two games.
Absolutely. And we don't normally have a bad record when Austin's out. So,
yeah. And then, of course, the game versus the Bruins, I'm sure they'll bring it.
Yes.
There's no question there. They're going to bring it.
Definitely.
Yeah. All right. So be sure to follow us on social media to keep up to date on everything that we have for the Leafs. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Our handle is at LTL1917. We love hearing from our listeners. So leave us a comment on our posts or tweets with your thoughts of what's going on with the Leafs.
Also, subscribe to our YouTube channel for video of games that we attend at Scotiabank Arena. You can also see some video of our road trip from Carolina that we took earlier this season as well.
As always, we say thank you to our healthcare workers and first responders for everything that they do.
And we say thanks to you for listening. So till next time, go Leafs, Leafs, go. Go.
Do you believe? For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.